From the studios of KUSP in Santa Cruz, California, I'm Gary Shapiro, and this is From the Bookshelf. James Ellroy is my guest. His latest novel is Perfidia. His previous novels include The Black Dahlia, The Big Nowhere, L.A. Confidential, White Jazz, and lots of others. He's also the author of a memoir called My Dark Places. James Ellroy, welcome to From the Bookshelf.
I'm happy to be here.
You know, when I think of Perfidia, I think I've always known that song, but I associate it with Casablanca. There's a scene in Casablanca, the flashback scene, in which Rick and Ilsa are dancing to the song. And at that point in the story, Ilsa is married to Victor, but Rick doesn't know she's married.
Yeah. Is it Perfidia they're dancing to?
Yeah.
It is. Yeah. It's been covered a million times.
Yeah.
And it's a 1938 circa big band tune. And it was originally written in Spanish and translated by a man named Gonzalez. And there are numerous orchestral versions, numerous vocals.
How did that song come to you, or how did it become the title of this book?
I've always loved the song. It's uncommonly plaintive. It describes a state of yearning. Perfidia of a novel itself is nothing but a treatise on history as yearning. Yearning for allegiance, yearning for belief, yearning for transcendence, sexual yearning between men and women, allegiance, betrayal. Perfidy, the word, means, is betrayal, synonymous with betrayal in Spanish, hence perfidia. It is the ideal soundtrack for the novel, hence a lovely title.
Do you think there's this is a gigantic historic novel. Do you think there's an audience for historical novels, or do you care about your audience, or do you think about your audience?
I write for myself, I write for God, I write for my friends. I write for my loyal readers. Is there an expanding audience for this book? There is, I can't say this type of book, because there is no book exactly like Perfidia. Time will tell, brother. Time will tell.
It's different than your other books in what way?
Okay. Perfidia is the first novel in the second L.A. Quartet. My original L.A. Quartet, The Black Dahlia, The Big Nowhere, L.A. Confidential, and White Jazz, covered 1946 to 58 in Los Angeles. And that series merged the crime novel and the historical novel. The Underworld USA trilogy, which is three novels set between 1958 and 1972, merged the crime novel, the historical novel, and the political novel. Those three books are American Tabloid, The Cult 6000, and Bloods Are Over. The second L.A. Quartet takes characters, both real life and fictional, from the first two bodies of work in World War II. It's a perfect historical romance. I'm going on to write an entirely different kind of book.
So this is the first of four books?
Yes.
Uh-huh. And do you think this period of time, 1941, is kind of a, in some ways, it's a less dangerous time than 46 to 58?
No, I wouldn't say that. The geopolitical stakes were much higher. The world was awash in blood. You know, the Cold War was going on from 1946 to 1958, but the sheer number of casualties had diminished greatly.
That's, of course, that's true, but the potential for... I grew up in Los Angeles. I remember the air... They used to have those sirens that they were supposed to get under our desk as though our desks could protect us.
Yeah.
I wondered, why don't they just erect a giant desk over California? That would be...
The truth is... We survived the Cold War, and the world's going to continue to survive. And as close, World War II was as close as we got to not surviving.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you think things are better now or worse now than they were in 1941?
I never answer questions about the world today. Perfidious that in December 1941, it is the result of my immersion in the rigorously circumscribed 23 days of the book itself. I have no thoughts pertaining to anything after December 29th, 1941.
How do you do it? How do you, as an artist, how do you immerse yourself in that period? Do you have...
First thing, I have never joined the digital edge. Uh-huh. I don't have a computer.
Yeah.
I've never logged on to a computer. I'm computer illiterate. I have no cell phone. I don't watch TV. I don't go to the movies. I have a car. I have a girlfriend. I have a landline telephone. That's what I'm talking to you on right now. So I deny the world as it is, and I live immersed. I do go out. I go to the store. I have friends. And I'm digging living in 2014, but my heart belongs to 1941.
When you drive by, Wilshire Boulevard and Fairfax and those, all the things that were there, you know, they're not there. The May Company, that's not there anymore.
And I especially loved growing up the Miracle Mile that you just described.
Yeah.
Wilshire and Fairfax, and it's a shithole now. It's unkempt. It's run down. Used to have a great drive-in on the northwest corner, the May Company on the northeast corner. Mm-hmm. Some good-looking gas station.
Yeah, yeah.
You had the La Brea Tar Pits. It's still there. But
it's still there.
Doesn't look the same.
I like the Gilmore Drive-In and the old Farmer's Market before they put up that horrendous shopping center that they have there now.
Yeah, the Grove, yeah. You have the Grove Bites. Yeah. Farmer's Market rules. The Grove drools.
I used to spend a lot of time at the Farmer's Market when I was a kid. That's where I got my comic books and stuff.
I bet you got your comic books at a place called Pearson's Alley. It was a little alleyway enclosure. It sold paperback books, magazines, and comic books.
Uh-huh. Yeah, right there in the Farmer's Market. I love that spot. Well, the guy was very nice to me.
Where'd you go to high school?
Went to Beverly Hills High School.
Where'd you go to junior high?
Bancroft Junior High.
Yeah, I went to John Burroughs. Yeah, well, you could have gone to Hollywood High, though. That's too bad you didn't. That was a cool school.
There was Jack Webb is a character in Perfidia. And
he is, yes.
Yeah, he was also, of course, an actor.
Well, more importantly, Jack Webb was class president of Belmont High School there, down on the edge of downtown Los Angeles. And he appears as a character in Perfidia. And I don't, the one question I never answer with this book and others is what's real and what's not.
It's all real.
It is all real to me. That's the only thing that matters. And can I convince you?
I'm totally convinced.
Yeah. I'm in the verisimilitude business. If my semblance of truth is valid, you believe the fictional human stories that attend my larger depiction of history, then I succeeded.
Do you think there's a problem as a writer when you're writing about characters that we have seen later on, so that, you know, we know that nothing's going to happen to them?
No. I think that tension is created, and the fact that we know the characters, select characters in Perfidia, will survive the events of Perfidia to appear in earlier written but latter set books isn't applicable, because we understand going in, as soon as we began reading the books, that I'm out to create whole, and that my design is grand. One of the most difficult things that I did in plotting this book is to go back and read my own previous seven books and create timelines and chronologies and dates of birth for the characters I plan to use in Perfidia. So everything is seamless. So if you take the second Ollie Quartet and the first volume, of course, you've read, just published Perfidia, then you have the original Ollie Quartet, the Underworld USA trilogy. These 11 novels circumscribe my career as a historical novelist.
Perfidia. For I found you the love of my life in somebody else's eyes. Your eyes are echoing perfidia, forgetful of a promise of love, you're sharing another's child.
With a sad lament, my dreams have faded like a broken melody.
While the gods of love look down and laugh at what romantic fools we mortals be. And now I know my love was not for you, and so I take it back with a sigh. Perfidious one, goodbye.
Talking with James Ellroy, and his latest novel is this mammoth Perfidia. It's just looking at it is beautiful. I love the cover of the book with the sun, but also the Japanese flag over Hollywood.
Yeah, you get the idea. You look at the cover, you know, it's a big book, and you understand that it's L.A. and the era Pearl Harbor, and there's the big red rising sun of Imperial Japan.
There's a certain cynicism in your books, in that people are so corrupt and there's a lot of corruption and evil.
I will tell you that I'm not cynical. I despise cynicism, nihilism, and minimalism. Perfidia is largely about idealism. Perfidia is largely about belief. And the protagonist, Hideo Ishida, who's Japanese-American, obviously, Kay Lake, a woman, obviously, William H. Parker, the greatest American policeman of the 20th century, who would later go on to become chief and reform the LAPD, appears and as a protagonist. And Dudley Smith, the corrupt Irish cop from the LA Quartet. They're believers. They're devout. They're love-starved. They're highly, highly libidinized. And the war is to them a moment of stunning self-sacrifice, the opportunity to line their pockets, to realign their psyches. It's the justification for a lot of bad behavior, and it's a party. And as the flap copy for Perfidia says, it's the party at the edge of the abyss and the precipice of America's ascendance. There's four big party sequences in the book, and it was a binge. L.A. the month of Pearl Harbor, the 23 days I describe in Perfidia, is a binge. People are drinking, they're having deadly serious and frivolous love affairs, there's lots of drugs, there's lots of booze. It was a blast.
And there's movie stars and the Ritz brothers. I like that the Ritz brothers were there.
The Ritz brothers have a walk-on near the end of the book.
Yeah. And they're drunk, the Ritz brothers.
they are drunk, yeah.
Well, it's the beginning of a war, but it's also the doomsday kind of feeling of, you know, what's, is there going to be a tomorrow?
Yeah, is someone ruminates in a party at Ace Kwan's Chinese pagoda down in the Opium Den. Those swabbies at Pearl didn't know what hit them. We could be next. Yeah, we didn't need much prodding to assume the party mentality.
In your years as a novelist, and as you immerse yourself, as you've been writing now for many, many years, a lot of the people who lived in that era were alive when you started, but they're all gone now. Did you talk to those people? Did you get to know those people? Did they curse as much as the people curse in your book? I think because of old movies, we don't hear people cursing that much.
Yes, you're correct in that. They did not curse as much. And I can only tell you that you're dealing with some hard-edged fools in this book, so of course they're prone to curse that much more. And it's a novel about belief. It's very much a book steeped in what I hold to be my rigorous moral vision. It's also a profane book. It's full of sex. And
well, we like that.
Yeah, we do like that, and it's a big book.
Did you know a lot of people? Did you talk to?
No, I didn't know anybody. I knew my parents, of course,
uh-huh.
But I trust myself to make it up, and I've lived in the American idiom.
Yeah.
For as long as I can remember, I love racial invective. I love Yiddish. I love black hip cat, jazz patois. I love alliteration. I would never spell a hard C word with a hard, you know, unless I could spell it better with a hard K. And I love the outrageousness of the American idiom, and perfidia is very much an exercise in that.
Do you, when you were reading, went back and read all of your books, did you find things in them that surprised you that you'd forgotten about?
Yes. By and large, though, I could call the sentence by sentence writing of it and didn't dwell. I've gotten better. I've honed the language of the 1940s, 50s, and 60s throughout my career. And I had a task to compile fact sheets and chronologies in order to make perfidia seamless. So by and large, although I did occasionally linger, I just tore through it.
Yeah. So do you, when you set out to, now you have four books in your head, so do you know where they're all going, or are there surprises as you're writing?
There's no surprises, and don't believe anyone that tells you his characters do things that he or she didn't intend, because the characters don't exist off the page. What they're saying is they got to a point of dramatic option and they chose one or the other. I have the second book worked out and significant to tell, and I know the outline of the third and fourth books.
So it's just a matter of, Alfred Hitchcock used to say that it was kind of boring to make a movie, that the planning of the movie was the most fun, and then he had to go to the chore of actually making it. How does that relate? Would you rather have them already written, or are you looking forward to writing them?
I know I love to work. Yeah. I love the plotting. I love the plan. I love sustaining concentration. I'm meticulous and diligent in the extreme.
And you use a typewriter?
No, right by hand.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
White
notebook paper, black ballpoint pen.
You sit at a desk, lay on the couch, what?
I'm sitting at the desk where I'm speaking to you right now.
Uh-huh. Yeah. No television. What about radio?
Don't listen to the radio.
What about the ball game?
Don't give a shit about baseball, football, basketball, horse racing, hockey, soccer.
That's no interest to you.
No.
But your characters probably like baseball.
No. No, I don't think you'll ever see a baseball reference in one of my books.
Yeah. What about the horses? Don't they bet on the horses?
There's a scene early on in Perfidia at Santa Anita Racetrack.
Right, Santa Anita.
But you see some nags going around in a circle, and that's sufficient for me.
That's good. So what about reading? Do you read?
Rarely.
You're not interested in other authors' work? It clouds your mind, or what?
Doesn't cloud my mind. I've got shit to do. I got to work.
Yeah.
I like to work.
Yeah.
The clock is ticking.
Yeah.
I'm 66 years old. I want to write 6 more novels in my lifetime. I push the frivolous aside. I work. I like to make money. I'm a hard-charging guy.
Yeah. Mickey Spillane, he wrote 6 novels, you know, and it took him about 2 weeks.
Yeah, well, I'm better.
All right. I'll give you that. Although the covers of his books were better.
They were very, very racy. Yeah.
They were. But you do have that kind of... I mean, I think one of the reasons I mentioned Jack Webb is not only is he in your book, but he always spoke in those short sentences, and you like to use those.
There's interviews that require short sentences, and then there's interviews that require longer ones. You never know.
But in your in your book, the books themselves have the short sentences too, right?
That the whole thing about my style,
yeah,
the extreme abbreviation, that style, I ended my deployment of that style many books ago. These are perfectly formed mid-range sentences.
Do you go back and edit, or do you labor over each sentence as you go?
I don't go on till the next sentence, to the next sentence, until I think the preceding sentence is perfect. Then in blocks of 15 or 20 pages, I go back and rewrite. Then I have 100-page blocks of handwritten pages typed up, and then I, once they're typed and proofread, I go back and correct them again.
Hmm. Do you work with an editor, or do you just hand it in?
Everyone works with an editor. My editor is the great Sonny Mehta, the boss at Alfred Akinoff, the greatest publisher in the world.
Yeah. So how far away from the next volume are we?
2 years.
I got to wait 2 years, James Elroy?
You got to wait 2 years, brother. I'll give you something to do.
Will you come back and talk with me again?
Absolutely.
The author, James Elroy, his new novel, Perfidia. Thanks for indulging me.
Mr. Shapiro, God bless you.
Well, that's it for this week's From the Bookshelf. I hope you enjoyed the show and you'll come back and see us again next week. In the meantime, check out the podcast page at fromthebookshelf.com. You can subscribe to the podcast at iTunes, and you can like us on Facebook. I want to thank my guest, James Elroy, his latest novel, Perfidia. From the Bookshelf is produced by Francis Venegas. I'm Gary Shapiro. See you next time.